I need a couple of favors from you this morning. When we wrap up and get ready to dismiss, I need you collectively to not let me forget to make a tie-in from the message to the palms that were distributed this morning. Okay? Okay. I just need that, because sometimes by the time I get to the end of the message, where my mind is and where I'm going and all that, it'll go right away. So thank you for that. The other thing is, I need you to let me know if you are glad to have the opportunity to gather together this morning. Okay? And what I mean by that is, I need you to tell your faces. So, how many people in the room or online, and if you want to put this in the chat section online, you're certainly welcome to do that. How many people in the room on Friday were elated about 1 o'clock in the afternoon when you received an email telling you that your child's track meet in Muncie, Indiana on Saturday was canceled? It was a big track meet with like 8, 10, 12 teams, which means it would have been 6 to 8 hours outside sitting in the stands watching your kid run for 9.7 seconds. So how many of you in the room were elated to get an email about 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon telling you your child's track meet was canceled, only to realize that that meant for 2 hours on Saturday you had to sit at the soccer game outside? What? Not you guys? You guys didn't have to do that? Wow. And I'm not going to lie. As I sat there at the soccer game and it started snowing and I was sitting facing the wind and the snow was pelting me in the face, I was elated that we had received an email that I didn't have to sit in it for 6.5 to 8 hours on Saturday. So, if you were asked to identify one of the most confusing and baffling things about followers of Jesus to people who don't follow Jesus, what would you identify? What would you suggest? What would you think might confuse and baffle people who don't follow Jesus about people who do? One of the most common confusions and things that baffle people who do not follow Jesus about people who do follow Jesus is how much those people resist the very God they say they believe in and place their trust in. It could be something that we say, we believe that we believe how God desires for us to approach money and finances, yet try to maintain control of our finances in ways that maybe don't honor God. It might be that we say we believe in God's approach to relationships, but yet the relationship that we're in that we probably shouldn't be in is just too convenient to not be in, regardless of whether it's the relationship God wants for us. It could be any number of things, but my guess is that each and every one of us in our lives at some point in some way has wrestled with some kind of an internal tension about the God that we trust, the God that we believe in, the God that we place our faith in, and the way that we live our lives and the decisions that we make. My guess is that somewhere along the way, this internal struggle that most of us have experienced in some way, shape, or form has led to us finding ourselves almost in opposition to God. If you've ever been there, or maybe even if you're there now, you are not alone. Even people in Jesus' day found themselves in this internal tension, this internal struggle, almost being at opposition with God, including a guy by the name of Caiaphas, who served as the Jewish high priest during the time of Jesus' day. Caiaphas was the high priest, which meant that he was kind of the ruling person in charge of the Jewish religious belief system. The translation of that is Caiaphas was kind of a big deal. Caiaphas held a position of power and influence. He would have been the primary intermediary between the Jewish nation and the rule of the Roman government. He would have been the one to have kind of final say in all matters surrounding the Jewish religious system. And this is not an understatement, but Caiaphas was part of a dynasty. Caiaphas' family had been in the position and the role of high priest. Caiaphas served as high priest from 18 to 36 AD. So he was high priest for about 18 years. His father-in-law, Annas, had served as high priest before him for a period of about 22 years. And it was a lineage thing for a total of over 40 years. His family had served as high priest. Five of his brothers-in-laws served as high priests as well. And so Caiaphas yielded a lot of influence, a lot of power. And Caiaphas had the opportunity to maintain and leverage control. Now, we may not be high priests. We may not serve in that high level of a position in an organization or in anything like that. But my guess, there is at least one area of life in which we try to maintain control, even if it means we find ourselves in opposition to God. And my guess is that as this takes place, that each and every one of us finds ourselves with the opportunity to misuse whatever position and whatever power we hold to maintain control in areas of life that we try to maintain control in. Because each and every one of us, even though we're not a high priest, even though we're not in that high level position, each and every one of us has a position. And we have power in certain areas of life. Parents have power over kids. Employers have power over employees. Friends have power over friends. That's why there's such a thing as called peer pressure. Because we're exerting power over people in relationships. And each and every one of us has an opportunity in the position and the power that we hold to use or misuse the position and power to maintain control. So Caiaphas was the high priest, and things went along well for Caiaphas. Things went along relatively smoothly for Caiaphas for quite some time until a carpenter turned rabbi by the name of Jesus entered into the pages of history. And when Jesus entered onto the pages of history, it presented a lot of problems for Caiaphas. One of the problems that it presented for Caiaphas is some of the countercultural teachings that Jesus did. He taught things in a different way than the Jewish religious leaders understood them. He taught people about God in ways that the Jewish religious leaders didn't always agree with or like. In fact, the Jewish religious leaders wound up offended by things Jesus said all the time. But all sorts of people taught all sorts of things counterculturally in that day. So though the teachings didn't always sit well, they weren't the main problem. The main problem that Jesus presented for Caiaphas was the crowds. See, everywhere Jesus went, crowds gathered. And people were attracted to Jesus. And they were attracted to the things that he said. And they were attracted to the things that he did. And everywhere Jesus went, more and more people gathered. And for a person in Caiaphas' position, one of the risks that he ran with that was that a crowd could get incited. A crowd could get stirred up. And when the crowd gets stirred up, it could potentially turn into a riot. And if it turned into a riot, if there was an uprising in Jerusalem, if there was an uprising around the temple, if there was an uprising under Caiaphas' command, Rome would go, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? We need to squelch this uprising. And if the way to squelch that uprising is to remove the person in power, in the position of power, then that's what we will do. The crowds presented a tremendous problem to Caiaphas by Jesus, because the crowds potentially put his position and power at risk. And one of the other problems is for Caiaphas is that Jesus, when he taught and when he did things, he did them with such authority. When Jesus would teach and say things that the Jewish religious leaders didn't agree with, or when he would do something that the Jewish religious leaders would find offensive, they didn't ask Jesus what he said or what he did. They always asked him who he thought he was, and by what power and by what authority he did these things. And so, who Jesus claimed to be, the very Son of God, sent to redeem sin and restore the path to right relationship with God. And on whose authority, on God's authority, that he claimed to do these things is what presented the problem for Caiaphas. Not to mention the fact that what Jesus said and did often left himself at odds with the Jewish religious leaders. So, all of this is going along. The tension is building. Caiaphas is getting more and more threatened. He's getting more and more disturbed as the time leads up to what we begin to know as Jesus' arrest, crucifixion, which, by the way, we will remember the crucifixion of Jesus on Good Friday, this Good Friday, at 7 o'clock here. And so we would love to have you join us for that and be a part of that. And here's one of the things. This is an in-person only deal. So we're not going to stream online. We're not going to do a Good Friday, because we just don't think that what we have planned will translate online well. It's something that we think needs to be experienced in person. And so we would love to have you come and be a part of that. And then, as all this tension builds, that there's something that happens in a little town called Bethany, which is about a mile and a half outside of Jerusalem, that becomes the final straw that pushes Caiaphas past being threatened by Jesus, being intimidated by Jesus, to a whole other level of offense. So, let's check out, according to Matthew, one of Jesus' closest followers, who was there, who would have seen what was done, who would have heard what was said, and he writes an account of Jesus' life to help people understand who Jesus was, what he did, and what it means for our lives. So, here's what Matthew says. Oh, before we get there, though, sorry, I forgot about this part. Before we get there, the tension builds between Jesus and the Jewish religious leaders. Actually, it builds between the Jewish religious leaders and Jesus. To the point that Matthew records what we might almost describe as a rant by Jesus about the Jewish religious leaders. And in this rant, Jesus calls them hypocrites and blind guides. And then he kind of caps the whole rant off with this statement right here. He says, "Snakes, sons of vipers, how will you escape the judgment of hell?" Yikes. No wonder Caiaphas had a problem with Jesus. Jesus basically goes to the Jewish, he looks right at the Jewish religious leaders, including somebody like Caiaphas, and says, yeah, you may be responsible for the Jewish belief system. You may be responsible for making sacrifices as the intermediary between the people and God. You may be in that position of power, but you're a hypocrite. You're a blind guide leading people where you don't even know where you're going, let alone taking them somewhere. You're snakes, which again, if you go all the way back to creation and you make the connection to God's curse on the serpent who tempted the first humans, that's not a compliment. Sons of vipers. And then just for extra measure, by the way, you're all going to hell. Is it any wonder there was a level of tension in the relationship? Is there any wonder that there was a level of opposition? Which makes the events surrounding this straw-breaking deal in Bethany all the more reason for us to be attentive. Here's what happens in Bethany. Many in the crowd had seen Jesus call Lazarus from the tomb, raising him from the dead, and they were telling others about it. Now, remember that one of the biggest problems for Caiaphas was the crowds that had gathered. And so a few days before this, Jesus had been summoned by two sisters of a guy named Lazarus. Their names are Mary and Martha. And the reason that they had summoned Jesus is because their brother Lazarus was sick. And they believed that Jesus could heal him because they had a relationship, they were friends, and all of that. And they thought, surely if Jesus finds out Lazarus is sick, he will come and heal him. Well, Jesus doesn't go right away. Jesus actually stays where he is for a few days. And by the time Jesus gets to Bethany, Lazarus has died. And not only has Lazarus died, but Lazarus has been buried. And so Jesus goes to the tomb and raises Lazarus from the dead. Now, as you might imagine, this drew some attention. And the attention that it drew people. People began to come and see and hear. Because what they had seen, what others had seen, they were telling people about. And so what's happening is the strategy that the Jewish religious leaders were using to try to divide Jesus from the crowd wasn't working. This event drew a crowd. The strategy of the Jewish religious leaders up to this point had been to try to discredit Jesus. They tried to ask him all sorts of questions to try to trap him, to try to trick him, to try to get the people to think Jesus was some out there wacko guy that they needed to dismiss and not have anything to do with. But when Jesus does stuff like this, their strategy's not working. In fact, more people are telling other people about what Jesus had done, and more people are coming to see what's going on. The crowd isn't getting smaller. The crowd's getting larger. And it's not just in one area. It's in every area that Jesus goes. The crowds continue to get bigger and bigger. And Jesus continues to get more and more attention. And people keep talking about Jesus. And we're just so sick of hearing about Jesus. We've got to find something to do with this Jesus thing. Because people, what we're doing isn't working. And so then, this is what happens next. That was the reason so many went out to meet him. The reason is because people are telling. The crowds are gathering. It says, that was the reason. Next slide, Bob. That was the reason so many went out to meet him, because they had heard about this miraculous sign. So now we don't have just a crowd. We have so many. This is a big deal. And the Jewish religious leaders are seeing this thing continue to get momentum and all of that. And so here's what happens next. There's nothing we can do. So the Jewish religious leaders get together and they start having a conversation and they say, there's nothing we can do. Look, everyone has gone after him. One translation says that the whole world has gone to him. The whole world is believing in him. And so not only are people going, but according to what John says next, people are believing. It says many of the people who were with Mary believed in Jesus when they saw this happen. So not only are we gathering a crowd, not only are people talking about it, not only are people showing up because they're curious as to what's gone on, but many of the people who are going are actually believing in Jesus. our strategy isn't working. We're trying to get the crowds to diminish, but they continue to increase. We're trying to get people to stop talking about Jesus, but more people talk about Jesus. We're trying to get people to understand that he's not the Messiah that was promised by God. He's not the Son of God. His claim to be the Son of God is utter foolishness. In fact, it's heresy. But everywhere he goes, more people gather, more people talk, and more people are believing in him. And the Jewish, and Caiaphas in particular, as the high priest, overseeing the whole thing, is struggling. And my guess is that some of us have found ourselves in a position where what we think should be happening isn't happening, and we feel like we're losing control. And when we feel like we're losing control, things begin to unravel more and more. So you've got a whole group of people that have gathered because Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, and people are talking about it, and now more and more people are believing in it. But John tells us that some went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Hey, David, just so you know, bub, you're about 2 slides behind right now. Okay, thank you. Okay, but some went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Now, I would love to know who went to the Pharisees. What group of this that went to the Pharisees, and why they felt the need to go tell the Pharisees what was going on. We don't have that information. I would love to know, but we don't. All we know is that some of the people who were there went to the Pharisees and told them that Jesus had raised somebody from the dead. And I suspect that in the process they said, Jesus raised somebody from the dead, and people are talking about it, and people are gathering, and people are believing. I have to think that that's part of the conversation that they had with them. So, here's what takes place next. It says, then the leading priests and Pharisees called the high council together. So the high council would have been a group known as the Sanhedrin, which would be like the Supreme Court of the Jewish religious system. And the high council likely involved a couple of different groups of people that didn't agree on much and didn't really like each other all that much. It was likely made up of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And they didn't agree, and probably a third group known as the Essenes. But the Pharisees and the Sadducees didn't agree on a lot of religious stuff. They didn't agree on the afterlife. The Pharisees believed there was an afterlife and there would be a resurrection of the dead in relationship with God. The Sadducees did not believe in the afterlife. The Sadducees believed that this life was all there was, and the only hope you had was this life. And that was why they were sad, you see? So you can always remember the difference between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, because the Sadducees didn't believe in afterlife, so they were sad, you see? The Pharisees were so focused on the Jewish religious law and making sure that all of life was right in place and it was fair. As far as I see, Pharisee. Okay? So you can remember those two things, Pharisees and Sadducees. They didn't agree. They didn't agree on things politically. They didn't agree on Israel's role and how Israel should approach the Roman government and Roman rule, and all they believe they should approach it much differently. They didn't agree on much of anything, but one thing that they could agree on was that Jesus was a problem. Jesus posed a threat to the Jewish religious system. Jesus posed a threat to the control and the position and the power that the high council and the Jewish religious leaders held over the Jewish people. So they were willing to set aside their differences about Rome and religion and all of that for the common enemy of Jesus. And then they were willing to have a conversation. Setting aside those differences, here's part of the conversation that they had. It says, what are we going to do? This man certainly performs many miraculous signs. If we allow him to go on like this, soon everyone will believe in him. Which is kind of ironic because just a couple of cents ago, they said everyone's going to him. Everyone's already believing in him. So what's already started, they think, and I love the word there, allow. They think they have the power and ability to allow people to believe what they want to believe. If we allow him to continue, then we're going to allow people to believe instead of controlling what people believe. What are we going to do? Our strategy up to this point isn't working. People are still gathering. People are still talking. More and more people are believing in Jesus. So what are we going to do? If we allow this to continue, it cracks me up. If we allow this to continue, like you have the ability to determine what people do and where they gather and where they don't and what they believe and what they don't. But it makes sense to them because they're the ones in control. They're the ones in the position. They're the ones in power. And that's important to them to maintain and hold on to. What are we going to do here? And then, maybe you've experienced this in one of the areas of life that you seek to maintain control of. When you feel control slipping away, when you feel things start to unravel, I mean, and maybe this is just a me thing, but when you feel that start to happen, don't you sense a little bit of fear start to creep in? A little bit of uncertainty, a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of wondering what the future's going to hold? And don't you sometimes even begin to think that this isn't going to end well? In fact, not only is this not going to end well, this is going to end in utter destruction. This is nothing and this is going to go right. Anybody else ever been there once or twice in your life? No, just me. Okay. So, part of the conversation that they have as fear begins to creep in with them is, then the Roman army will come and destroy both our temple and our nation. If we allow Jesus to continue, the Roman army is going to come in and destroy both our temple and our nation. And we can't have that. What are we going to do here? And so this conversation's going on. And all of a sudden, one person in the room, and again, this room's full of powerful and influential people, people of high position in the Jewish religious system. This is the Sanhedrin, the high council. And one person speaks up. And the person who speaks up is Caiaphas. Caiaphas, who was the high priest at that time, said, "You don't know what you're talking about." Caiaphas says, and I would imagine in the room that that people were making some of the same suggestions in the strategy that they were already trying. My guess is that people were saying, "Well, we've asked him about this in the law of Moses, and we've asked him this about relationship with God, and we've asked him this about giving to see, paying taxes, and we've done all this stuff, and we haven't been able to trip him. So let's ask him this question." And Caiaphas is like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know how out of hand this has gotten. You don't know how much of a threat this has posed, not just to me, but to the Jewish way of life and the Jewish belief system. You guys can sit here and talk all day, but you don't know what you're talking about. And then Caiaphas comes up with an idea. And in Caiaphas' idea, there is a major shift in the strategy from trying to discredit Jesus to trying to eliminate Jesus. And here's what Caiaphas says. "You don't realize that it's better for you that one man should die for the people than for the whole nation to be destroyed. You don't realize that it's better for you. I mean, after all, we're the ones who preserve the Jewish way of life. We're the ones who sacrifice for the people in relationship with God. We're the ones who make sure that people are in line with what we believe they should be in line with. And what you don't realize is that it's better for you. If you want to stay in the position of power, if you want to stay in the position of control, if you want to stay in charge, it's better for you. I mean, it's better for the nation. You know, you see what Caiaphas is doing? It's better for you if you want to stay in control and if you want to stay in position of power. If it's better for you that one man die than for the entire nation to be destroyed. Because if Jesus continues to garner momentum and gain attention and draw crowds, then eventually what's going to happen is Rome is going to come in and they are going to destroy our temple and they're going to destroy our nation. And if you don't want to have that happen, if you want to maintain your position of power and control, it is better for you that one man die. And that man has to be Jesus. Huge shift in the approach. But there's a couple of things about this that Caiaphas isn't even aware of when he says this. When Caiaphas says this, he doesn't aware, according to John, that he did not say this on his own. As high priest at that time, he was led to prophesy that Jesus would die for the entire nation. Caiaphas isn't even aware of his role in the grander plan that God is writing, in the grander story that is unfolding in what Jesus is about to do in his death and resurrection. When he says it is better that one man should die than the entire nation be destroyed, he doesn't even understand that what he's saying is it's better that one man should die for the sins of humankind to redeem sin and to provide the path to right relationship with God than for those people to suffer and experience an eternal death in hell separated from God. He doesn't even realize that's what he's saying. And he doesn't even realize that the nation that he's talking about isn't just the nation of Israel. He doesn't realize that in spite of his determination to maintain a position of power and control, that God's hand can't be forced and God's plan can't be thwarted, and that God is writing a grander story in what Jesus is about to do that Caiaphas is playing a key role in, and Caiaphas is completely unaware of it. It's not just for the nation of Israel, which is precisely what John says. John says, and not only for that nation, but to bring together and unite all the children of God scattered around the world. This isn't a nation of Israel thing. This is a what God is up to for people thing. People like me, people like you. People throughout all history who have been separated from relationship with God because of the sinfulness of humankind. And what is taking place here in Caiaphas' effort to maintain position and power and control is that God will not save the nation of Israel because of Caiaphas' leadership. God will save the nation of humankind through what Jesus will do that we could never do for ourselves. And Caiaphas is clueless. So, from that time on, the Jewish leaders began to plot to kill Jesus. So from that time on, the Jewish leaders began to plot Jesus' death. Now, the word plot is an interesting word. When we plot to make happen what we want to happen, what assumption do we make about who's in control and who's in charge? When we plot, we assume we're in control. We assume that we're in charge. It's like when our kids were younger, and we were somewhere together with friends, and the parents are over here talking, and the kids over here are talking. And you start to hear the kids plotting about what they want to do. And you start hearing them plot about, well, let's go out to dinner after this, or let's do this, or let's do, or you come over to my house, or I'll come over to your house. And the parents are over here experiencing a couple of different things. One thing the parents experiencing is, you've got to be kidding me. How many times have we told them, do not try to make plans with your friends without talking to us first. Do not put us in the position of having to tell you no in front of your friends when you've already told your friends that's what you're going to do. Because if you've told your friends that's what you're going to do before you've asked us, guess what the answer is going to be? It's going to be no. So don't do that. And so then you hear them doing it, and you're like, you got to be kidding me, they're doing this again. If they'd only been told once, twice, 17 million times not to do this, then maybe they would not do this. But you hear them doing it. And so there's a part of you that's incredibly frustrated. But there's also a part of you that's humored by it. Because there's a part of you that's laughing inside because you're going, they have no clue that they're not in charge. Their assumption makes perfect sense to them. They can make plans and they can plot and scheme and do all of this. But guess what? They're living under the assumption that they're the ones in charge. What they don't realize is they don't have the keys to the car. And they're not even old enough to drive the car if they had the keys. They don't realize that they don't have the debit card to pay for the dinner that they're plotting to get to go out to. They don't realize that what they're plotting and scheming to do can't happen without them coming and asking us anyway. But it makes perfect sense to them. And Caiaphas' plot makes perfect sense to him. Because Caiaphas' plot was seen by Caiaphas through the lens of position and power and maintaining control over life. And I would suspect that some of us, at least in one area of life, are trying to maintain control, even if it puts us in opposition to God. Well, it's not long before Jesus is arrested. It's not long before Jesus is crucified and then buried in a tomb. And it's not long on the first day after Passover before someone comes and knocks on Caiaphas' door to inform him that the dead and buried body of Jesus is no longer in the tomb. And it's not long, I love this, and it's not long before crowds of people begin to gather to see the resurrected Jesus. And it's not long before crowds of people begin to gather to hear the early followers of Jesus communicate that the Jewish religious leaders had Jesus put to death, but God raised him from the dead. And it's not long before Caiaphas is no longer the high priest. And it's not long before the Jewish temple is destroyed. Which means it's not long before the very things that Caiaphas tried so hard to control and maintain were gone. His rule as high priest ends, and the temple that he tried so hard to save is destroyed. And interestingly enough, more people have followed Jesus after his death than before his death. And so the very movement that Caiaphas tried to end because it posed a threat to his position and power has continued long after Caiaphas' rule ended. Now, here's the thing for some of us. It's easy to criticize Caiaphas. But before we do, isn't there just a little bit of Caiaphas in each of us? Aren't there areas in life in which we try to establish and maintain control? Aren't there areas of life where we may even find ourselves in opposition to God? Because what following Jesus costs, we determine isn't worth paying? Aren't there areas in life where we have the opportunity to say yes to Jesus, but the cost of saying yes to Jesus means giving up control? And so instead of saying yes and giving up control, we say no and try to keep control? And when we've done that, how many of us have not experienced the reality that the very thing that we tried to maintain control over, that it wasn't long before it was gone anyway? Or didn't lead to what we thought it would lead to? You see, saying yes to Jesus will always cost us something. It will always cost us some level of control in our lives. But saying no will cost us far more. Which cost are you willing to pay? Let me pray for you. God, thank you for today and this time together. Thank you for this opportunity to look at this story of someone who, like me, can tend to try to establish and maintain control of at least one area of life. Thank you for the opportunity to say yes to you, but also for the freedom of saying no. Thank you for allowing us to choose which cost we're willing to pay. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so as we get ready to wrap up today, I got it. Thank you. Everybody's raising them, and thank you. And I remembered, so I got it. So the biggest problem for Caiaphas was the crowds. And today, in the tradition of the church, and all, not this church, the church at large, is known as Palm Sunday. And Palm Sunday is the day where Jesus entered into Jerusalem the week before his arrest and crucifixion and resurrection, by the way. And Jesus' reputation preceded him. And so as he came into Jerusalem, guess what gathered? A crowd. A crowd gathered. And so the crowd gathered, and they cut palm branches, and they waved them as Jesus went by. They laid their coats down and gave Jesus a path to enter in like he was royalty. And they waved, and they sang his praises, and they talked about how great Jesus was. But remember that earlier in the message I said a crowd can be incited, and a crowd can be stirred up to the point of a riot. And so the very people that waved the palms, praising Jesus and proclaiming Jesus on that day when he entered into Jerusalem, a short time later, just later that week, just a few short days later, they didn't have palms, but they were raising their fists in defiance, demanding that Jesus be crucified. The same people, because they had been stirred up into almost a riot by people like Caiaphas. People who were seeking to maintain control. And so this week or today, take the palm home. take the palm home and determine which crowd you're going to be a part of. When you see that palm this week, you determine which crowd. Are you going to be part of the crowd that praises Jesus? Are you going to be part of the crowd that raises your fist in defiance? Are you going to be part of the crowd that says yes to Jesus? Or are you going to be part of the crowd that says no to Jesus? Because saying yes to Jesus may cost you an element of control in life, but saying no to Jesus is going to cost you so much more. And so this week, take the palm and determine which part of the crowd you're going to be. Next Sunday, when we gather together to celebrate Easter, which means we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. I'm incredibly excited about what we have planned for next Sunday. Just the opportunity to gather together and answer this question. Why Jesus? And there's a lot of different ways you can take that question. You go, well, why should I believe in Jesus? Or you can ask that question of why Jesus would you do what you did? And next week, we're going to spin it to look at why Jesus would do what he would do for people like me and people like you. So we'll roll the preview video for Easter. When that preview video is over, we're dismissed. This week, as you look at your palms, look around your sphere of influence at the people who might need to know why Jesus would do for them what he did. And maybe consider extending an invitation to come and be a part of Easter with us next Sunday.